So, last week you heard about how the Psalm 68 vision came about, and Andy told you all about what had been the impetus for that and how it had gone step by step and where that has led us as a church. So that was the journey to where we are now. And this week we are going to be thinking about where to next, the journey from here, and how this all links to what we've been talking about the learning circle and Kairos moments, and whether in fact we are currently standing at a Kairos moment for the church, which will lead us into a new phase and new things. So, Andy, how does the learning circle link to what we're talking about?
Okay, hey, did you get the learning circle that's on the screen? Is that just a reminder? That'd be great. So, so as you know, we're kind of taking Lent to review the way we are as a church, and to try and just listen attentively and closely to what God might be saying to us. And we're using the learning circle as kind of a way of doing that, to sort of say that we're taking Lent as an opportunity to particularly hear from God, to try and hear what God is saying to us by His Spirit. And to use this process of trying to work that out in terms of how, not just what God is saying, but what we're going to do about it. So, and you'd have seen perhaps an email thing, and also at the back on the table there, and we gave them out last week, some questionnaires, which were really inviting each of us to think and to pray and to complete those questionnaires, so that we can together try and get all the pieces of jigsaw and try and get a sense of how God is leading us. So the learning circle is about observing, reflecting and discussing, and that's what we're doing at the moment. And then it's also about planning and accounting and acting. So having heard how God is leading us, to then start to think about what that means then in terms of practical steps. What difference is it going to make?
So what's your perspective on where we are now?
Ah, okay. Well, I think someone said to me, are we looking for a new vision then? And I think my sense is, but I'm talking, you know, personally here, I don't want to rule anything out, but my sense is that actually it's not about finding a new vision. I think the Psalm 68 vision we're still growing into, to be honest, in many ways. And in those verses from Psalm 68, we see expressed something of God's character, what God's values are, what God's concerns are, what God's priorities are. And I think that actually, in many ways, that Psalm 68 picture of who God is can act as kind of a compass for us as a church, to kind of help us to get our bearings, to check our alignment. Are our values, are our priorities, are our concerns aligned with God's? Because, of course, if we're God's church, then actually that's how it should be, isn't it? So really, it's using the picture that we have in God in Psalm 68, and of course in the whole of the scriptures, and particularly through Jesus, to say, are the values of our church life and the way we operate as a church life, do they reflect that? Do they work that out? Or are there some adjustments we need to make in terms of being aligned with God's character?
So, talking about being aligned with God's character, last week you mentioned what it means to truly welcome and include people. Could you say a little bit more about how that fits with the whole vision and Psalm 68?
Yeah, thank you. I was talking about, so as you know, that very much is tied in with the Psalm 68 vision was my own personal sense of vocation to adopt. And part of what I was saying last week was just about how initially I kind of just assumes that I would just carry on living life as I did and just incorporate Leon into that. And of course I very quickly realised that that's not the way it works, and that actually I had to fundamentally kind of review my own priorities and the way I lived and the way family life was in order to fully include Leon and to enable him to make his contribution and to be part of the family. So I suppose I realised that actually including people, and including Leon in that case, meant I needed to adapt. I needed to change in order for him to be fully included.
Okay. And so talking about including people on your family level and how that has meant change and a flexibility, do you think a similar thing should be happening in church life too?
So yeah, I think that's the case. I think my experience with Leon has made me reflect on how we include people in church life. And I think we are actually as the church that's fairly inclusive and accessible and friendly and warm and all of those things. But the thing that has really kind of struck me as I've thought about it is that actually it's been really hard to integrate Leon into this church life. Even when he was first adopted and younger, we had children's church at the time, so it wasn't even that we didn't have provision for children. But actually his particular needs and his particular experience in life meant that it didn't integrate naturally and easily into the way that we do church on a Sunday morning. And it made me reflect on to what extent that's true of lots of other people too. That actually established ways of doing church work for those that are used to them and it works for those of us that are here. But I suppose it made me reflect and ask questions about whether mainstream church actually has inadvertently the effect of excluding people who don't find that particular way of doing things helpful. And that actually our welcome needs to go beyond simply saying people are welcome. If all we expect them to do is then to fit in with the way we're doing things, that might not actually work in terms of people feeling included and accepted and able to make their contribution in the life of church. And I guess it also got me reflecting about how our attitudes might potentially put people off. If our values aren't in the right place, our priorities aren't in the right place, then actually it might put people off. So I think there's something here for us to think about as we think about what kind of church God's calling us to be, about kingdom values. We often talk, don't we, about kingdom values being, we might say, upside down, but actually it's worldly values that are upside down and kingdom values that are the right way up. So things that we know Jesus said, like the first shall be last and the last shall be first, where he turns priorities on their head, where he talks about if you want to be great, then you must be a servant in the kingdom. And then in the gospel reading that we had last week, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Familiar, I think, words of Jesus to many of us. But we see that actually in those words of Jesus, the challenge is for us to recognise that the kingdom often works in the exact opposite way to the way that the world operates. And I think there's a danger that actually much of our church culture can mirror the kind of worldly culture rather than be fully Christ-like in the way that we might hope it to be.
Ooh, so that sounds quite challenging. So the church is more worldly than we might think we are in the way that we do things. What do you mean by that?
I've probably been caught a lot of things. But actually, I think the particular thing I'm thinking is just recognising that actually much of society and the way human society works naturally is that it's organised by the able and the strong, the people that have got agency and power and can make things happen. But the inadvertent consequence of that can be that in establishing that mainstream way of doing things, it can marginalise people who are weaker or more vulnerable or poorer or haven't got that agency, haven't got the power, haven't got the ability to shape the way that society operates. And I think often we don't necessarily notice that. If we happen to be fortunate to be in the mainstream and fit into our cultural situation and society in a reasonably functional way, then actually we don't necessarily realise that and we don't notice it unless we come across somebody. So unless it affects us, perhaps, so we have an experience of being excluded or marginalised for whatever reason, or unless it affects someone that we love or someone in our family, and then we find that suddenly we're coming up against a system that isn't designed to cater for the particular needs and experience that we might be having or that someone that we love is happening. And that's often when we notice these things. So it's possible actually to sail through life and not notice that at all. But most of us probably at some point or other do come across that and do notice that. So here I'm just looking at my notes to remind myself what I wanted to say. And this can be about lots of different things, can't it, in our society. So it can be about race, it can be about age, it can be about health issues, it can be about disability, whether that's a seen disability or an unseen disability. It can be about sexuality, it can be about our mental health, it can be about having a low income, it can be about being a single parent. I can go on and on and on. So many people in so many ways can find that for whatever reason they become marginalised from the way things are done and the way that society operates. Though actually, having said that, I think that society, in our society, we see that actually society's got much better at doing these things, much better at being accessible and inclusive and recognising particular needs and experiences. And I'm very pleased to see that that's happening. That's a very positive thing. And I think churches are starting to as well, but I suppose in a way it's a sadness that actually, given what we were talking about, kingdom values and God's priorities, it's a sadness to me that actually the church hasn't been leading the way more in this respect. And actually, often the case is that many churches lag behind the progress that is being made in terms of inclusive society and accessible society. And the Psalm 68 vision, if it's acting as our compass, reminds us that actually God's priority is the opposite way to the world. It's at the mainstream where the strong and the able shape things, and it's okay as long as you fit into that. The kingdom is the opposite way around, and God's concern is that he puts the weakest and the poorest and the most marginalised at the heart of it, and basically says society needs to work around that rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful vision, isn't it? And although we hear about it in the Bible, I don't think our churches always quite live into that vision fully. So if we are wanting to live into that, what might that look like in our church life?
Well, I guess that's what we're trying to discern, isn't it? That's what we're trying to say. So if we're accepting that actually we do want to take our values and our priorities from God, and I hope that's not controversial, I hope that is what we want to do, then actually it's about saying, okay, how do we do that then? What are the differences that might make? And I think just a little example is something that is a journey that we've already been on, and it's just a small example, but actually small changes, small adjustments can actually make a big difference, especially to those that they affect. So, the little example is this. As a church, we now use gluten-free bread for communion. And actually, until COVID struck, we had just decided that we were going to start using alcohol-free wine as well. And I think this is quite a good little illustration of the difference between fully including somebody and valuing them and just making things a bit better. So, a church might not provide gluten-free bread, and it might not provide alcohol-free wine, which would then mean that anyone turning up for communion on a Sunday might, if they can't have bread with gluten in, or if they, for whatever reason, don't want to have alcohol, they might not feel they can receive. So actually, at the most intimate, inclusive part of the service, someone might then feel excluded and not able to fully participate. They might also, depending on the reason for, say, not taking wine, they might feel embarrassed and shamed and judged for that. So, a church that doesn't do those things, in a way, is inadvertently excluding people in that way. So, a church might actually improve that situation by saying that if you want gluten-free bread, then it's available on request, or you can go to that particular station over there. And if you want non-alcoholic wine, you can go to that station over there. And actually, we've done that in the past as a church. It's probably part of our journey. So that's a step in the right direction. It starts to provide for and cater for someone that might have those particular needs. But actually, a much better way of operating is for us to say, we recognise that some people can't have gluten, and we recognise that some people can't have alcohol. So rather than singling them out for different treatment or special treatment, let's put that at the heart of our church life. Let's all have gluten-free bread. Let's all have non-alcoholic wine. And we do that as a way of being fully inclusive of those that, for whatever reason, can't have those things. And that, to me, is quite a good little illustration of this principle at work, that actually we shape church life and community around the needs of those who otherwise might find themselves marginalised and excluded.
And as someone who needs gluten-free, I can testify, it makes such a huge difference to know that you are not going to have to, at that moment in the service that should be so prayerful, to think, do I need a card, or do I need a sticker, or do I need to make a shape with my hands, or do I have to go to a special place? You can just enter fully into feeling part of the body of Christ, fully on the same footing as everybody else. It makes a huge difference. Just such a small thing. And while churches might include people, it's so much better if it's just a given and that everybody is there together. So, that was one example. Reviewing our church life at the moment, is there a fear that this is really about our church becoming something completely different and we won't recognise it at the end of this process?
I hope not. I want to be open to whatever God wants to say and do. But I think, as you've probably been aware, or you've picked up over the last few months and few years, we've occasionally touched on this and tried to have bits of conversation. So again, part of my experience of adoption is that Leon goes to a special school rather than mainstream school, and so we had thoughts about whether there was some room for special church of some kind. And I think that could be part of what we look to try and do more. I think when we were first floating that idea and having those conversations, I think I was thinking in terms of this congregation. We talked in terms of being kind of perhaps in the autumn winter of its life, in terms of stages of the life cycle. So I think I envisaged that perhaps we could carry on in this setting being this congregation as church, but that alongside that we might do something that might be some kind of special church or some kind of alternative or the Reveal community or whatever, and that might be a separate thing. And I'm not saying that it won't be. And I suppose my assumption in my mind was that actually that might then gradually grow and become the main thing if this format of church gradually died out. But I think actually my thinking now has shifted, and I think I'm more inclined to think actually, I think a lot of what we're talking about in terms of inclusivity and accessibility and valuing people and that, we already do in quite a lot of ways anyway. And actually, as a church, we already do include and welcome and value people that otherwise might be marginalised or excluded for all sorts of reasons. So actually, in some ways, it's a strength of ours that we can perhaps develop and do more self-consciously and more intentionally, so that actually that becomes a safe place and an accessible, caring, inclusive place for more people who might otherwise be fearful of coming to church or might feel they're going to be judged or they might have had bad experiences in the past. So actually it becomes about how we present ourselves, how we advertise ourselves and how we are in a way that helps to reassure people that otherwise might feel that they're on the edge, to know that they can be welcomed into the heart and into the centre. And I've lost my thread of what I was going to say there. So that's right. So actually I wonder whether now, and this is me wondering and putting it to you for you to think about and talk about and for us to discuss, I'm wondering now whether it's actually about incremental changes and developing and growing what's, in a sense, God's already doing amongst us, rather than necessarily setting up something completely different and then that becoming more the main thing. So I'm wondering whether now it's more like, you know, person by person, as people, as we connect with people, as people join us, as we ourselves are more open about our needs and how things might help us, that actually we can make those little incremental changes that actually start to really completely reshape the values of church life. I don't think you've got any more questions on your sheet.
No, so, not for now. So to you.
So just to wrap up, Ronan, to refer us back to the circle, I've been sharing the last 2 weeks in terms of the journey so far and perhaps where my perceptions are at the moment. And I know that I have a bigger voice than most because of my role here, but actually I'm doing that to set the scene really and to get the conversation going, so that actually I want to invite you all into that conversation and into that thinking and into that praying, so that together we hear God's voice. As we remembered last week, we can all have Kairos moments, we can all hear God's voice. And if we leave it to one person to discern it all, then you might get their version of it, but that might not be God's full picture really. So actually, I think we all need to play our part in asking ourselves the questions we pray about. You know, just what I've been shown, does it resonate? Does that feel right? Actually, do you think Andy's got it completely wrong? If you do, then just tell me gently, quietly at some point in a corner. And what does that mean? If this does feel as though it's where we're at, what does that mean? How might we give shape to that? What might our church life grow into? And that probably isn't going to be radically different, because we're still going to be the same people, but hopefully with other people as well. But actually, it might, I hope, grow to be a more kingdom values kind of environment, inclusive environment. So the circle is designed to help us to do that, to observe. What do we observe at the moment? What do we observe amongst ourselves and what God is doing? Reflecting on that, what does that mean? What do we think God might be saying through that? Discussing it, that's where we're getting to now, so I encourage you to fill in those questionnaires. Perhaps next week there might be more conversation for us to actually start having more of a conversation, having been setting the scene and getting you thinking, getting the ball rolling. And then once we start to get to a sense of, yes, this is where we feel we're at, this is what we feel God is doing, this is the Kairos moment that God is speaking to us through, then we can get into the plan and the account and the act. So there isn't a plan at the moment, other than, you know, we want to be like God in our values. The actual plan will arise out of what we discuss together. Thank you.